What's the one thing that you've been telling yourself that you'll do for the past several years, but you've yet to take the leap of faith to actually make it your reality? Maybe it's moving to another state. Maybe it's writing your first script, applying for that dream job, starting the side hustle, or maybe even it's going all in and starting your own business. Whatever it may be, I think we can all relate to having the fear of failure hold us back from the things that we truly want in this lifetime. That's why I'm so excited for y'all to meet our guest today. From being emancipated at 16 years old, becoming a board-certified dermatologist, and building her own thriving practice, Dr. Anna Guanche shares her inspiring story of how pushing through the feelings of fear and failure can actually be the catalyst to creating a life that you've always wanted, no matter your circumstances. In this episode, Dr. Guanche shares her stories of leaving her first job and signing her first lease, the impact that her mentors have had on her, and the secrets to her incredibly fun and successful social media presence. Plus, she even lets us in on her next big move, and can I just say, tins all around. She proves that no matter what it is that you want in this life, you have to be consistent, confident, and courageous to achieve it. After listening to her story, I know you're going to be beyond motivated to beginning your journey towards your next big move. Hey, I'm Priscilla.
And I'm Lauren.
And you're listening to the Her Next Big Move podcast.
This is a place where we will help you gain clarity on your big goals, break down those limiting beliefs that may be holding you back, and develop a solid strategy for building your dream life and business.
We are going to have vulnerable conversations about building our own business and introduce you to some of the most accomplished businesswomen we know to find out their secrets to success too.
Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired and give you the confidence to make
your next big move. All right. And we're back. With this episode, I know is going to be so much fun. The minute that we met Dr. Anna last week, I was like, I think she's my soul sister.
Last week, we were so blessed to have you on our panel and be able to really highlight your story. And today, we're so excited to be able to dive even deeper with you and be able to really share for everybody else what you've been through, how you've really been able to push through some of those challenges, and what you're up to now, kind of bringing you to that next evolution.
Yeah, absolutely. So while we'll get into all of that, we'd love to kind of kick it off with the beginning of your journey. You've accomplished so many things thus far, but really understanding where this passion for what you do now and what you do today, where it sparked and where it kind of got started.
Well, I went to medical school thinking I would be an orthopedic surgeon. And when I was doing my different rotations through med school, because you just try everything and they teach you everything.
Yeah.
I did a rotation in dermatology, and it was the first day, and by noon I already knew for sure that I was going to do derm, because that morning we did a laser resurfacing, a lip augmentation, and a very large basal cell excision, a skin cancer excision. And I was like, wow, this is all the things. It's like procedures, but intellectual, but you can see what you're doing on the skin, so patients relate to you really well. You see them all the time, regularly, and it just kind of like clicked. It was one of those aha moments for sure.
Yeah.
And I have never looked back. And I absolutely, absolutely feel like it just fits me, and it's exactly what I was supposed to be doing. So I think in that sense, I'm blessed, and I was able to switch gears at a stage in my career where it was possible and the right point in my career, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so going from, you know, discovering your true passion, discovering this is definitely the career path for me, and then getting started into working with a doctor, and then going from that transition of working with others to starting your own practice, would love to kind of know what that transition was like of going from school straight into working with somebody and then that transition into your own practice.
Well, you know, you go to school for so many years to become a doctor. You go to 4 years undergrad, 4 years med school, 4 years of residency. So 12 years later, you know absolutely nothing about owning a business, running a business, employees, regulations, all that stuff. And you have to learn it all from scratch. It's terrifying. So I did work for another physician. And understandably now, there were things that I wanted to change and I wanted to do. I was always a go-getter. I wanted the latest gadget. I wanted to offer certain things. And he was like a little bit resistant, but now I understand that as an owner, I understand that, you know, you may not want to sign a 5-year lease on a $185,000 laser, you know, and all that. I get it. But yeah, like, I was so raring to go and really like make a name for myself and get out there and do things for people. And I felt tied down. I felt like my hands were tied behind my back and I wasn't able to do what I wanted to do. So it gave me that push, but I was terrified. And you're walking away from security of that paycheck. And you're walking away from someone else handling HR and handling everything to you handling it. And of course, I decided I wanted things my way. So I started a practice from scratch. So I didn't go and buy someone else's practice, which you can do, and you can just kind of learn their way and slowly absorb patients and they get to know you and then buy it. No, I just started a practice on my own. And at the time, there was no one in Calabasas. So I had to do a rezoning, a parking study to get the right parking amount and all these different things I had to do to create a practice in Calabasas, which is where I live. And one of the reasons I needed to practice where I live is because my kids were little. I had one child in med school and one child in residency. And my professor, who's also my idol, who's also my mentor, had that. She was the owner of her practice as a dermatopathologist. She was fit. She had 3 kids, very successful. One went to Juilliard, one went Dr. K, by the way, Val de K, in case she ever listens to this.
Shout out Dr. K.
A urologic surgeon that was a husband, and she had a gym in her house, and she lived 3 minutes away from her practice. And she said, why would I spend my time on the road? So I learned so much from her about how to, in real life, be a doctor, be a mom, be fit, be fashionable, be well-spoken, be respected. Like all those things that I admired about her, I emulated. And I think seeing someone do it firsthand is invaluable. Mm-hmm. So when you're picking your mentors, you can pick your dreamy mentors that are like someone in the media. But I think having a mentor that's a real human that you interact with and see them doing this day to day is key. Wow, I went off on a tangent.
No, that's amazing. Because I think mentorship is something that we talk about all of the time. And sometimes people don't really know how to go about that and how to, you know, get a mentor, not know how to approach a mentor or how to really learn from somebody else without feeling like you're copying them, but really that you're being inspired by them and what it is that they do. So whenever you kind of have gone about mentorship throughout your career, maybe with Dr. K or with others, maybe that you're looking, aspiring to in other ways, how have you kind of looked at that, or how did you approach it with even Dr. K maybe?
So when you say copy, I think that it all boils down to how humble and respectful you are and how appreciative you are. I think, well, first of all, we're not in the same exact industry. I'm more in cosmetic and she's more in pathology. So it's different, but it's also still dermatology field. And I think that always respecting and always asking for advice respectfully and, you know, that kind of thing, rather than being a competitor and being like, oh, you have this idea, I'm going to take your idea and I'm going to make something of it and copy you. So that's a little bit different feeling and a different action. It's a different thing that you're doing. So, and I do think imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And so I used to be offended by people that copied me. I mean, literally, there's been so many people that copied me. There's things they do on social media. There's things that they did, like they literally copied my website and accidentally forgot to change the phone number. So we were getting calls from someone else who,
oh my God,
copied your website and only changed a few images. And at the time, this was when I first started practicing, that was like 2 years in, I was offended. But now I'm like, oh, that means that I have something of quality that people want to use. And so what? I'm not threatened by it anymore. But I think in the beginning, you feel a little territorial about your stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, especially for women, being able to first of all, create the space for other women to be able to pull a seat up at the table and really blaze those trails into those industries that aren't necessarily, you know, female dominated, and that they're still working to get that kind of equality in that space. And so how would you say that you were able to really use that advice that you got from your mentors and now apply it into kind of the next generation, helping the next generation of women?
Well, it's a frame shift. Like, people are not your competitors. They're your colleagues.
Yeah, totally.
And women and men, you know, sometimes don't recognize that, and they see everyone as a competitor. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is you're not building a network. You're not going to rise because you don't have good relationships. And I really, really believe that relationships are more important than almost anything else. Reputation and relationships. So, I think that attitude that starts out in the beginning of being competitive needs to be intentionally pushed aside, and you should support and praise your colleagues, learn from them, but learn from them in a respectful way, mm-hmm. and not in a secretive, like, let me go find out what so-and-so is doing and then I'll copy them, or I'll, you know, that kind of thing. But hey, you really know what you're doing. Would you be willing to teach me? There's so many people that will be willing to, and then there's some that won't. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you start to realize that you're here to excel, but you're also here to raise the next generation. And in some ways, in medicine, we have that. We were lucky because we have that as part of our structure. Like, you have residents, students, there's people that come and rotate here. There's people that will call me, message me, ask me, what do you do about this? And what do you do about that? I'm like, happily share that information. Mm-hmm. And I'm not afraid. So some of it also has to do with confidence, to know that just because you share information and tell people things, that doesn't mean it's going to diminish you in any way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even on my social media, I share a lot of technique and tips and procedures. And a lot of my colleagues will say, why are you telling everybody all our stuff or your stuff? Why are you sharing? And I go, you know, I don't feel threatened. It's okay with me if other people learn, and maybe they serve patients better, and maybe they do this technique and other people benefit from it. That's great. How many patients can I see in a day, honestly? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, it builds you up, as it positions you as a leader. If you're teaching, you are the leader in a way, right? You're the yeah. one who sets the tone. And so instead of being afraid that you're sharing your ideas with people, you're actually A, making the world a better place, I think, and B, you're positioning yourself as a big, confident, unfearful. I don't like fear personally. I try to fight it as every step of the way. What is the word for unfearful? Brave person.
Yeah. Brave, courageous. I think mm-hmm. that, gosh, everything you're saying, I think, is just so powerful and just so important for all women in business, in general, to really be able to listen to and to really emulate too. A major reason, I'm sure, of how you have been so successful and gotten to where you are today. Where do you feel like that really started for you? Were you like this way, this courageous, this brave, this confident from a young age, or is that something that you grew into?
Absolutely not. No, I was very, very much sort of like the ugly duckling at school. I was very much very nerdy and weird, quote unquote, and gangly. And I went to a private school, and it was a Armenian private school. I'm half Armenian, but turns out a quarter genetically. But anyway, 23andMe, you find out all these things. I'm English, French, Irish, and Armenian, but nobody remembers anything but Armenian. So because I have the hair and the whatever. Anyway, so bottom line is, I was a foot taller than everyone, and I was like just awkward. And I did have a lot of insecurity coming out of school and going into college and all this stuff. And I was trying to prove myself and get straight A's and go to med school and, you know, all this. And I also fought against the idea that I wasn't smart. So my brother was brilliant, genius level brilliant. So I was the dumb one, you know, and everything really has to do with your frame of reference when you're growing up. Right. Mm-hmm. And all the teachers at this little school would be like, are you as smart as your brother? I'm like, oh, every class I went to. So I had a lot of things that I had to work through, but I've been very intentional about working through them. And, you know, besides that, there are some crazy things that in my childhood, like I was in a foster home twice, once when I was newborn and once around age 16, I had to leave home because there was just a lot of crazy stuff going on at home. And I was raised with no mom. And so when I went to the foster home, they said, you're so mature and you're so well-spoken and you're fine. We're not going to try to find somebody to adopt you. We're just going to emancipate you. So I started working and being emancipated at age 16. But I had a lot of issues, obviously, as far as self-confidence, as far as feeling secure and feeling like a value to myself, you know, self-esteem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I had to work through that. And I've actually gotten to a much better place, but it's by intentional work. So if you're like, for example, I was afraid of public speaking, but I did public speaking because I knew I wanted to. And I would take propranolol because my heart would race and I would freak out. I would practice my speech 100 times, but then I pushed and pushed and pushed myself to keep doing it. And then I got better. Now I love public speaking. It's like my jam. I love a live audience. I love, you know, and I had to grow to it. So it's not like, oh, I was born. Some people think, oh, she was born that way. She's just extroverted or whatever. And that's not really true. So I hope that gives people hope that if there's something you have in your heart that you really want to do and you feel like scared, it's okay. It's okay. You're going to be scared. And you're going to do it. And each time you do it, you're going to do it better. And you're going to have some failures. And then the thing is not to have that refractory period. I would do a public speaking event and then I would have a refractory period of sometimes years because mm-hmm. I'd be like, I can't do that again. But then somehow inside of me, I knew I wanted to. So I would go do it again. And then TV opportunities came up a lot and I would sabotage myself. I just wouldn't answer the email in time. I just would make myself unavailable. And I really wanted to be on TV. And I just would, instead of jumping on it, just self-sabotage because I was terrified. I didn't like the way I looked on TV. And I thought I looked fat on TV but I wanted to be on TV. So I was like, I had to overcome these things and just be like, look, this is what I look like on TV. This is what my voice sounds like. I got to get used to what my voice sounds like. So there's all these levels at which you will feel insecure or fearful, which is just the same thing. And you just got to intentionally hold your nose and go. Just hold your nose and go.
I love that. Being able to just really like take steps forward, right? And like being able to push through that fear. And I think so many people listening can probably relate to that of like whatever that scary thing is for you of being able to not only do it, but continue to push and do it. Mm-hmm. And so what was something that helped you kind of through that? You said that you would practice all the time and that you just continue to push. Do you think that was kind of your drive coming through? Or was there a mentor or people helping kind of push you along that journey as well?
So as far as that goes, some like really challenging things happened in my life and I was having interpersonal challenges and I ended up feeling like I couldn't sleep. I was like upset to the point where my heart would race and my mind would race. And it just ended up being such a destructive thing to me that I had to find peace somehow. So I found yoga and I had tried yoga years before and thought it was the most boring thing I've ever tried. So I tried it in my 20s. So if you haven't tried yoga or meditation, I will tell you this. It really does make a difference which yoga teacher, which studio, which place you're in your life. So if you didn't like the first one, there's so many different types of yoga and there's so many different teachers and some you'll resonate with. But anyway, to get calm, I had to find something. And so 6 months after that event in my life, I ended up finding yoga and it really, really, really helped me calm down, tune in to myself and be able to sit with myself and be happy with myself. And I started meditating on love and bravery. Those were the two things I wanted most. Mostly I wanted love, but then I also wanted to be braver. I want to be bigger. I want to do more things in one lifetime. I want to potentiate myself. And I would be like, the only thing that keeps me from doing that is that I'm scared. I'm scared that I'll do a mistake. So I started meditating, like, what if I got on stage and I said something wrong? What would happen? I would not die. I would play the whole thing out all the way to the end. Can you die from a heartbreak? I don't want my heart to break, but like, then I won't have love, right? So yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to be brave to get what you want. And I started thinking, look, I'm gonna start crying. I started thinking, like, what are all the things I dream of? I'm gonna have to just be gutsy about it, because like, I won't die from it, you know? So, and I'm more brave. I'll climb a mountain, I'll jump out of a plane. But I was really less brave about my love life and my and public speaking and being on TV, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I think that is, you know, so powerful to be able to share that, because I think so many people would look at you on social media, would look at you in the different TV appearances that you've had and things like that, and never, ever imagine that that was something that was, you know, challenging for you to overcome and to show up in that way. And I think that's really inspiring. As you were really starting your business and you were making this transition in from being a student to being, you know, an employee to then being, you know, a boss and being really somebody that was showing up and really betting on yourself. I know during the event that we had last week, whenever you were on the panel, you were kind of talking about some of those moments of signing the lease, of kind of making on the office, signing the lease on some of the equipment. Can you kind of talk through some of that transition in your life that you had, and how you really have not only started now almost 20 years ago, but really sustained and are continuing to grow your own practice?
So I worked for that other physician. We were talking about how there, I wanted to grow, I was having growing pains, but I was really scared. I mean, again, it's fear, right? Because even my husband at the time was like, well, what if your collections don't come in on time and you can't make your lease payments? Like, what if you don't get patients? Like, what if that area is not, like, they don't need a dermatologist there? Well, like, what if all the what ifs just keeping me up all night again? And then I was trying to pick where I'm going to live, where I'm going to practice. So am I going to be in Beverly Hills? Am I going to be here? Am I going to be there? And I kind of knew I wanted to be right where I live, because remember I was telling you about Dr. K living where she works and being so close. So I kept looking at leases and not deciding. I was in this like messy state that you can be in when you're so indecisive. It's like soul sucking, right?
Yeah.
And then I finally signed the lease. Like, I found a place and I signed the lease, and I went into go mode so hard because I made a commitment to something big and scary. And like I say, like Tony Robbins says, take massive, determined action. I don't know if you would count that as massive action. For me, it was, because it's a 5-year commitment to sign this lease, to be in this spot. So I better make good of it. So I went into overdrive. I designed my own website. I started looking for people to hire. I looked up regulations. I mean, I was at my computer 24/7, and I didn't pay myself for 2 years. So for 2 years, it was all in and no, you know, and I was in debt. I had to borrow money. And at the end of the day, I knew I was going to have to succeed. I could not succeed. That's, I'm not going to allow myself that. And so when you put something on the line, a little blood on the line, I think that really forces the issue. If you're just doing, like, you know how people call it, I hate to say the word, but piss in, you know how, like, you just kind of like dip your toe in, let me see how it works out, and you don't make a true commitment, I think you're less likely to have to make it work. So jump in is my advice. Like, go in and put some of your own money on the line. And even now, I'm at a state of my career and my life that I can make investments. So I have various investments, and people will bring investments to me, and I'll ask them, how much of your personal resources are invested in this? If they say no, we're just working with investors, da 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 da. No. You don't have any
gusto.
You're not putting yourself on the line, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
as much, or you don't believe in yourself enough to put your own money in it.
Yeah.
You just want to use other people's money and hope it succeeds. That's not the same.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think too, with like you said, of like having that undoubted belief of like, when you put your own, you know, money, effort, time, sweat, everything in, you are so invested that you're like, this has to happen. There's no other option. Mm-hmm. But I think, like you said, of people that just kind of go half in, they don't fully believe it themselves. And I think that truly what that is the key to kind of creating anything you want is being able to have that confidence and that undoubted belief of creating the next steps of getting to where you're trying to go. Mm-hmm. And so as you've been creating and as you've been expanding, what's really been something that's helped you kind of keep that light and stay on that path as you're taking those next steps forward? You mentioned that you've had a yoga practice now. What are some other maybe habits or practices that you've been able to incorporate that's helped you kind of just stay driven and stayed on that path?
So first, let me go back to one thing that you said, and you said that you'll have no doubt, and then whatever. You will have doubt and you will have fear. So you just have to do it anyway. You will have doubt. It doesn't matter. You just got to go, go, go. Because if you just let that take over, you're not going to go, you know? Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, like, besides yoga, I find it exciting and challenging to have almost like moving parts all the time, which for some people can be overwhelming. And sometimes even for me can be overwhelming. But I'm creating and weaving this entity that was not there before. And so the act of creating your business the way you want it, almost everything here is the way I wanted it, because it's mine. So, you know, you have to be limited only by your own resources. And if you don't want to be limited, then have less limitations by making more resources, you know. So it's something that's alive. It's not static. And you can weave it in one direction or another. You can say, oh, I'm starting a product line. Oh, now I want to add staff. I want to add another doctor. I don't want to add another doctor. I want to write a book. You're creating. It's a creative process. Yeah. So you can really, really enjoy being empowered by that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something people don't talk about as much. Mm-hmm. And also personal freedom. So you have to make good of whatever purchases you make and leases you sign. And you also decide to take 2 weeks off. Well, you're not going to make as much money when you're not there, but that's on you. And you own everything. It's all you. So you say, oh, I'm gonna take this time off, and I know that we're not gonna make as much, but this is the thing I want to do right now. But you get to say that, because sometimes you work for somebody else, you can't say that, right? You're like, what?
Exactly. That's like the beauty in it.
Yeah.
As you've grown your business, what are some of the more like technical things that you wish that somebody would have just told you or taught you about business in general that you could enlighten on any entrepreneur or soon to be business owner that's maybe listening to this, that's like, please look at this or please do this whenever you are starting your business or you're growing your business? Because I wish I would have known this.
I would say, please be ready to delegate, be ready to have help in things that you don't know as much about and make the investment. Because I think one trap that I fell into a little bit and that people fall into is trying to do every single thing. And you don't know as much about some stuff. Someone else might, like your HR specialist has seen and done this a million times before, and you're trying to be an HR person by looking it up online and trying to make sure you do it right. And it's okay when you're really, really tiny, but your goal should always be to start really onboarding experts as consultants or as employees, so that you're not doing the things you're not good at and you're focusing on the thing that you're good at. So you have to isolate as a business owner, what do you bring to the table that is your talent and what's your niche in the business? Mm-hmm. And let other people who are good at what they do what they do, empower them. And so I think the big message here is micromanaging. And a lot of people who, especially in the beginning of their business, want to micromanage every detail to the point where they can't make progress.
Yeah, so true. I feel like that's such a challenge that people go through as they kind of go from the solopreneur doing everything to starting to expand and then building their team and being able to delegate. And so for you, what was some of the first things that you delegated off your plate?
HR.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
I would say HR for me is still, and I'll tell, I have an office manager and an HR team that remotely, and then I have, it's just one of those things where I would rather not be in those discussions. I would rather just work with my staff and not be in those discussions behind the scenes of, you know, certain aspects of HR or conflicts and things like that. I would say what's been luxurious for me as a business owner now is I just walk in and, you know, I have someone for each issue, and it comes up, and maybe if it's really a bad thing, I'll hear about it a little bit, but it's not like I'm emotionally invested. I think that as a woman, it's been hard for me, especially in the beginning, not to get emotionally invested in my staff. And people are going to think I'm mean for this, but I, you know, I really felt like they were my family and my friends. But you have family and friends. Unless you're starting a business with a good friend, that's a different thing. But you have to, unfortunately, not be so emotional about everything, because it's business. You have to practically move forward. And what ends up happening is you make bad emotional decisions. You keep people that aren't productive because you like them, or you feel sorry for them, or, you know, that kind of thing. And if you have someone who's in HR who does reviews and has a systematic way of telling how much this person is producing, what you needed them to do, and is also able to do the face-to-face communication with them about them not performing, if you're like an empath or kind of wimpy like me, you're going to have trouble doing that. And then you don't set boundaries and you can't ask for what you need as easily. And so if you know this about yourself, then you need to get, and a lot of, I hate to generalize, but a lot of women are more like that than men, I would say in general, because we tend to be emotional and nurturing, and we tend to get really connected and know their whole story. And then it's like, oh, even though you're not performing, but you have two kids, you know, you just kind of like get into this whole emotional thing. And you should be somewhat emotional, but not that far in that you're not functioning as a business leader. You need to guide this big ship. And there's a lot of people on your ship. And like right now I have 16 employees who make their money here. So we need to function and we need to be successful in order to give the best benefit to all the people that work here. And we can't have somebody who just doesn't function, because it's really not fair to the people that do. So if they don't, I don't have to say blah, blah, blah to them. Somebody will say it. And since I'm not good at it, so if you're good at that, you could do it. But if you're not, then you know your fault, your weaknesses. Make sure you're putting in place people that work at your place that are good at what you're not good at. Not people you happen to personally like necessarily, people that can do what you can't do. So that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think so much to take away from that. I want to also talk on something that I think a lot of people are probably going to know you from as well, which is your social media. You were having fun on social media.
We were just going through your page before this podcast, and we were like, oh my God, this is, first of all, I'm like, I need everything. One of everything, please. Like, sign me up. And also, like, you're just hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're having so much fun. I'm really curious, like, why, if you made a conscious decision to really step into that, and how that has helped or maybe hurt your business. I think a lot of people have, you know, trepidations going into really going all in to social media as a form of marketing and brand awareness for themselves. But yeah, I'm curious how that started and how it's going for you.
So I hired a physician assistant, Wendy, if you're listening. And she really saw, because I had a celebrity patients or celebrity contacts, and I had posted some, I only had 1,000 followers. But she was like, I go to these drug dinners and then everybody seems to know who you are. Oh, she's the celebrity. Like, you know, you're Insta famous. I go, no, I'm not. And so she started sitting there doing stories and doing posts and stuff like that. And I was honestly in the beginning kind of like, this is going to be another tip for you guys. I was kind of like, shouldn't you be studying derm or like following me around? And I would just be like, what is she doing? And then next thing you know, I had 3,000 followers. Next thing you know, I had 10,000 followers. I don't know. And she really inspired me to network with other physicians as well, which is another aspect of how I learned how important it is to be supportive, to share their posts, to praise them when they do a great job. Like, doesn't take anything away from you, but it builds this connection. Everybody's starving for praise. It's very nice. Anyway, so bottom line is I give Wendy a lot of credit for why my Instagram blew up. And at that time, we were mostly talking about what goes on in the office. We had some personality, there always was, and procedures. So we were just doing this on the side. We didn't have separate people to do it. Just the MAs would take video, we would post, and we realized like the more consistent we are, the more following we get. And then I discovered TikTok in 2020 and I just liked it. I thought it was funny and I had no expectations. I did not expect to have a bigger following. I did not expect to get any kind of money or endorsements from it or anything. So I think in some ways that's the purest, right? I just love making people laugh. I just love it. I've always been a ham. And so at the end of the day, that's all I was doing for. Next thing you know, my followers almost doubled. And we started incorporating my TikToks as a screen recording, We repurposed them basically for Instagram. Yeah. And so ended up like almost doubling the followers within a few months just because people thought it was funny. And it was introducing my procedures and products to a different crowd, because what happens on social media is it becomes very insular. It's like a echo chamber. So people that are interested in beauty search beauty, and then they get more beauty. You're not really getting people that didn't know about what you could offer or what can even be done, mm-hmm. Getting exposed to this. So people started following me because I'm funny. They thought it was funny. And then they're like, oh, wow, you can do that. You can reshape the nose. Wow, you can do Botox for sweating. I didn't know that. Or wow, oh, I better check my skin. I better get my skin checked. So we basically doubled our audience and ended up reaching people we didn't reach before. So we weren't vying for that same beauty audience. It was like getting the exposure to a new crowd. And then those people tell other people. So it was nice, but it was an accident, honestly.
Wow.
Yeah. And it seems like such a platform to be able to educate people, like you said, that maybe don't necessarily know. Uh-huh. And I think too, a really smart tactic that you guys have used is really positioning yourself like very much in the forefront to where people really get to know you and your personality. Mm-hmm. And so how would you say you've been able to do that? Has it been all organic as you've kind of started going through this transition of just kind of doing it on the side when you can to now really leaning into social media? Is there any
being kind a of part like, of your schedule, yeah, like things like that, like during the day? Is there
any kind of tactics that you've kind of started to implement now that you feel like you've kind of gotten to a flow of it?
So yeah, so now we have, it's a system, and I have two social media people on my team. So a lot of the creative stuff that I do, they do all the medical editing and the procedure editing and the daily stories on procedures. So they help me get consent for that, ask the patients if they are willing to post or share. And then they video me. We have a ring light in every room. So we have a black drape in every room. So we have like where our systems are ready to go, you know, mm-hmm. They have their own phones, their own iPad, you know? And so we have like it all down to like a science as far as that goes. TikToks, like I might be scrolling TikTok and find something funny and have an idea. They might have an idea. Sometimes Jenny, my lead medical assistant, will have an idea and be like, we should do this one. But I've made it a rule. And like Jerry Seinfeld says, he writes a joke a day, period. He crosses out on his calendar, no matter what happened that day. So no matter what happened, I do a TikTok post every single day. And so I think consistency is key, and you don't have to do it with TikTok, whatever it is you're trying to move forward with. But I think that, you know, I've gone through some rough times, some great times, whatever, and I don't compromise that. And in some ways it kept me feeling like functional in times when things are difficult and emotionally challenging, that, oh, but this one thing, I nailed it and I did that. And sometimes your quality isn't as high as you want it to because you're just in the middle of some sort of like chaos, but it makes you feel less chaotic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever it is you want to do and get better at, if you do something towards it and cross it off on your calendar every single day, imagine how that adds up every day.
Absolutely. Yeah. The consistency is key. And I think having that authenticity too, is what people can really feel too, mm-hmm. through all the videos.
Yeah. The videos. And I would say like meeting you in person, mm-hmm. it was even more like electrifying. It was mm-hmm. like your energy is just so contagious. Yeah. And I think that is, you know, a part of, you know, what really drew us like just continuously like to you and to be so inspired by you. And so just want to say thank you so much for being a light and to being a light to us, for sharing everything that you shared today, and being so open and vulnerable. It's not easy for everybody, but it's been such a pleasure. To end it too, we always have to say, and we always have to ask, what is your next big move?
I want to be on Dancing with the Stars.
Yes!
So my hobby as of a year and a half ago is dancing. I started with bachata and then went to salsa, and I'm obsessed. It makes me very happy. I can't even describe to you how happy. So my goal is to get better at dancing and get more famous, because you either have to be a star or a professional dancer. So I can't be a professional dancer, so I have to be a star. So that gives me like a direct goal to head towards. That's something I've wanted to do, and it's a dream. So that's my next big move.
I love it. I think it's so important too, to have the balance, right? It can't be all work. It's got to be some fun in there too.
Absolutely. You have our vote.
Yes.
100%. love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. All of the details of how you can continue to follow Dr. Anna will be in the show notes. And until then, thanks so much, Dr. Anna.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
That concludes this episode of Her Next Big Move podcast. Everything that we discussed in today's episode and for more information on Forward Female can be found in the show notes below and on our website, forwardfemale.com.
We want to thank everyone who helped this episode come together and you for tuning in.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit subscribe, leave us a review, and come hang out with us on our socials.